Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, beautiful listeners. It's your host, Tembi Locke. Welcome to Lifted, a podcast that pulls back the curtain on creativity, resilience, and the extraordinary moments when everything changes. My guest is Candace Nelson, a wildly successful entrepreneur known for co-founding Sprinkles, the world's first cupcake bakery and ATM. She's also the co-founder of Pizzana, a fast-growing chain of award-winning neo-Neapolitan pizzerias. She's an angel investor and a regular contributor to the Wall Street Journal, as well as author of the New York Times bestseller, The Sprinkles Baking Book. She's also a judge on Food Network's Cupcake Wars and currently a judge on this season of Shark Tank. But it's her latest book, Sweet Success, a simple recipe to turn your passion into profit, that is a handbook for the next generation of entrepreneurs. Candace is the embodiment of betting on yourself, and she invites all of us to do the same. And I love what she has to say about why making your eyes bigger than your stomach might actually not be a bad thing. Well, hello, Candace Nelson. Welcome to the Lifted Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm feeling lifted just being here.
Oh my gosh. First of all, there's so much I want to discuss today, but I always like to begin with talking about, because this season is about women and women in the food industry, I love to begin with early years, the sort of origin story around food. I know you grew up all over the world. You traveled a lot as a child. So I need to know who cooked in your home and who baked.
So my earliest food memories, I think, probably were when my family lived in Hong Kong. And the food in Hong Kong is pretty epic. And we took full advantage of it. We would go out as a family to fantastic Chinese restaurants all of the time. So I think my earliest memory really is, you know, being in these fantastic, busy, bustling restaurants, eating a food that I didn't realize wasn't my native, you know, food, basically raised on Chinese food. And then also at home, my mom did a lot of baking. And I remember one of my earliest birthday memories was her baking one of those classic Barbie dress cakes and just being so mesmerized. I mean, I felt like a princess. I had a princess Barbie cake. I was it, Tembi. It was incredible.
Well, what I'm hearing, and I think what we're going to get to later on, is you had these sort of like, in throughout your story, there are these elevated dining experiences, which we'll circle back to, is no surprise why we would get the Sprinkles cupcake later on down the line. But what was the most valuable things you learned about eating abroad, or, you know, shopping in markets and grocery stores abroad?
Well, I learned how delicious street food is, quite frankly. I think some of my favorite food in Asia is just that, you know, the stalls in Singapore, the street food, it is just so good. It's so fresh. It's so authentic and spicy and yummy. And so I really love eating casually. And I think, you know, in America, we like to eat casually too. We eat with our hands, obviously pizza, hamburgers, cupcakes, So there's a theme there. But, you know, I learned to appreciate all different types of food. I love flavor and I love variety.
And I think I heard you say the idea of the specialty market, meaning you can go and people who specialize in one thing and do it really, really well.
That's right. Yeah. It wasn't the land of the supermarket, which, you know, it historically has been here in America. You went to specific shops to get your specific things. And I love that very specialized way of shopping for your food. It felt elevated in a way.
And you baked when you were homesick. Is that correct? I mean, after the Barbie cake, later on.
So these were analog days. I was like a preteen. At this point, we were living in Indonesia, in Medan, Indonesia, not even in Jakarta, right? We were on the island of Sumatra and feeling very remote, as I was from my friends at home in the Midwest. And to my point earlier, it wasn't like I could email them or FaceTime them. I had to write lengthy pen pal, you know, letters to them. And so the way that I could most easily sort of soothe myself when I was feeling homesick was to bake the treats I missed from home. And those were just really classic American treats like Rice Krispie treats and brownies and, you know, Texas sheet cakes and, of course, cupcakes and chocolate chip cookies, the classic.
At this point, is a career in the food industry even on your radar? Is entrepreneurship on the radar? What's sort of the family sort of ethos around what you're going to do with your life, Candace?
Well, my dad was a corporate lawyer, so very, very risk averse. And he was a very loyal employee, I think. While I was alive, only worked for two companies. And so that was my model, right? Get a job, be loyal to a company, work your way up. My family's value system was very much rooted in education, which was great. I went to wonderful schools, but the value system there was certainly not entrepreneurship or commerce per se. It was about becoming, you know, a doctor, a banker, a lawyer, a professor. Nobody talked about working in food. You know, food people to me were those that didn't go to college. They instead went to culinary school instead of, you know, higher education of like a getting a BA or and then they went and, you know, worked their way through kitchens. So that wasn't a path that I ever considered, either entrepreneurship or food, quite frankly.
Well, I'm going to suggest that everybody who's listening or watching read or download and listen to Sweet Success, your book. It is a must read for would-be entrepreneurs. And it really is doing what you say in the book, which is inspiring this sort of next generation and particularly like the thinking around entrepreneurship. I know I learned so much about my own business. And in it, listeners will get sort of the trajectory of Sprinkles, because I know everybody wants to know like everything about how did she do Sprinkles? What happened with Sprinkles? It's all in the book. Get the book. But I do want to zero in on two Sprinkles moments, two like early origin story moments. One is the red eye to Chicago. And the second one is this late night craving. And the reason why I want to ask about those two moments are because I think they tell us a lot about the entrepreneurial mindset. Mm-hmm. So why are those two moments so seminal in the Sprinkle story?
I think there comes a time in every entrepreneur's life where you're faced with an opportunity and you have no idea how you're going to make it happen, but you have to say yes and just figure it out. And so that was my Oprah moment. My husband was my co-founder in Sprinkles. And we had been open for maybe 8 months. Our first bakery was in Beverly Hills, and we had really opened to instant success. We had lines out the door from day one. And this is not to sound braggadocious. This is just to highlight how surprised we were, because everyone had told us that this was a terrible idea. It was the height of the low carb craze. You know, no one had done a cupcakes only bakery before. People were used to spending 75 cents at the grocery store as opposed to buying a luxury cupcake for $3.25. So all that to say, we were very taken aback and very ill prepared for our success, but we just made it work. We worked 16-hour days. We were exhausted. We spent nights on the bakery floor. We were the it thing in Hollywood, which we couldn't believe. I mean, I moved to LA from San Francisco without any connections in the entertainment world. And you can read all about this and more in my book. But we had just gotten through the holiday season, which was beyond crazy, crazier than crazy, right? 10 times crazier than our normal day, which was already saying a lot. And it was January. And we were kind of like licking our wounds. Like we'd gotten through it. We were so thrilled with ourselves. And now it was January. We were just hoping everyone in LA would go on a cleanse and we might get like 6 hours of sleep. So it was one of those sleepy days midweek. We were cleaning up early. We couldn't believe it. We were going to go home and give my dog some love. My dog, who literally was like, poor thing, missing us so much. And the phone rings and it was Harpo Studios, which I didn't think much of because they had a production company in Santa Monica. They ordered cupcakes from us all the time. But this call was different. They weren't just ordering cupcakes for their office. They were ordering cupcakes for the Oprah Winfrey Show. And as I looked in the back and noticed that everyone was cleaning up and turning off the ovens at the end of the day, and in my ear, the producer was asking for 350 cupcakes to be in Chicago the next morning for Oprah Winfrey's studio audience, I sort of gulped and I said, of course. And then click, fire up the ovens, baked up those 350 cupcakes as fast as I could, frosted, boarded a red eye. I mean, it was one of those moments where it was an out of body experience. I just sprung into action, although I didn't really actually know how I was going to do it. Got it done. My husband and I had cupcakes up to here. We were each holding like five, you know, shopping bags full of cupcakes, total nightmare going through security, and arrived backstage at the Oprah Winfrey Show at the height of her, you know, popularity, by the way, the next morning. And Oprah Winfrey basically just delivered a love letter to our cupcakes on the show. It was really, it was a turning point for us. And that's to say we were already successful, but when that show aired, those lines out the door stretched to around two, sometimes three sides of the city block.
I love this story of saying just yes, because, you know, I think so many listeners will sort of recognize this, people who are starting out, people who sort of are already with something going in the motion. I know for me, writing my first book, when I got the call that maybe Reese Witherspoon was considering adapting, I was like, yes. You know, I didn't know how it was going to happen. I didn't know. You just say yes. But then this other thing that you talk about, which is the craving moment that I want to get to, speaks to the what if moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. Can you speak to that story?
Well, I really am a fan of dreaming big and embracing what I call the crazy ideas. I mean, starting Sprinkles, leaving investment banking, leaving, you know, a high paying career behind to start a cupcake shop was a crazy idea. And everyone said it wouldn't work, but I embraced it. I went with it. I felt it in my gut and I just believed in it. And it ended up being the right move. You know, but also not to lose track once you have success as an entrepreneur, not to lose track of that wonder and that daydreaming and that imagination, because that's where the innovation comes in. So several years into Sprinkle success, I was having a late night craving. I was pregnant with my second son and realized I had no cupcakes in the house. And that was problematic because I had eaten cupcakes through both of my pregnancies. And that was basically how I existed. That was my, lucky for me, number one pregnancy craving, because typically I had easy access, but not so much that night. Sprinkles was closed. And I thought, I own a cupcake shop. And even I can't get a cupcake, you know, at midnight. There's something wrong here. This is ridiculous. And I sort of ranted and raved and had a hormonal moment. And my husband is so kind. He put up with me. And instead of just sort of dismissing the idea as whatever, let's go to sleep and get a cupcake tomorrow, we started batting around the what if ideas. What if you could get a cupcake any time, day or night? What would that look like? You know, we pay rent 24 hours a day. Why wouldn't we want to sell cupcakes 24 hours a day? And so that's how the idea for the cupcake ATM was born.
I love this. I just love the story. For listeners, and I know many people know this, so there's Sprinkles. Presently and currently, there is my beloved Pisana.
Thank you.
and also that is, you know, how you sort of make the trajectory from cupcakes to pizza, which at first people might be like, well, what do those two things have to do with each other? But But what I've learned from your book and from listening to you in interviews is that both of those two things. One is that you bring familiar products, a mm-hmm. cupcake, a pizza, things we already are very familiar with, mm-hmm. but then you elevate them, right? And then you elevate them with the goal of bringing a little joy and a little love to people. And that is a part of the baking, pizza are the passion maybe, but the purpose is the joy.
Yes, the purpose is the joy and the connection, right? I think having grown up, moved, you know, to multiple countries, moving every 2 years, if I wasn't moving, my friends were moving, it was expat life. And so it was lonely at times. And so I was always searching for that feeling of connection and belonging. And where I found it often was around a table or in baking my favorite treats. And so this sort of connectivity that I find through food is really important to me. I think it's much more meaningful even than, you know, a delicious slice of pizza or a delicious piece of cake. It's the fact that we can all sort of come together and eat and agree on the fact that pizza is delicious. And it transcends cultures and age groups and so many things.
And in a fractured world, a moment of just unifying around a great slice of pizza, I mean, is just wonderful. And your both Sprinkles and Pisana, both, I think, on the consumer end, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but like they arrive in our lives as a way to be like, okay, this week was totally bananas and crazy. Let's go get some pizza on a Friday night, right? And I know it's going to be delicious. It's going to be fun. The service is great. And those feel like very intentional things that you brought to the marketplace. You didn't just be like, oh, I'm going to make pizza, generally speaking. It was like, no, it's going to be elevated. The ingredients are going to be very specific and carefully sourced, and it's going to bring joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can't be too fussy. It has to be special, but it can't be too complicated or fussy. It has to be easy to love and better for you and bring people together and feel joyful.
You said, make your eyes bigger than your stomach. What the hell do you mean by that, lady? Because I love it. I love everything about it. It's a food metaphor. It's a stomach metaphor. And it's also embracing expansion. So break it down for us.
Yeah, I think, you know, depending on what generation you are, I know I was raised with this adage of like, your eyes are bigger than your stomach. And that was a negative thing, meaning you'd piled your plate too high, you'd wasted food, right? And just be more careful. But I think as women, we're sort of conditioned to be careful and walk sort of softly and more silently through the world and not cause stir up too much of a fuss or noise, right? And so I encourage women to sort of put all that aside and dream really big and make a lot of noise and go after your dreams and just sort of deprogram yourself from that socialization that some of us have been put through in our society. So go ahead and pile up those dreams as high as you can on your plate and dig in.
I love that. Since the founding of Sprinkles and its incredible success, you have also become a serial entrepreneur. So there's the co-founding of Pisana, which we've talked about, and you now have CN2 Ventures, where you provide seed money or angel investor, right? I think we both know Quentin Venny.
Yay!
I love it. And their company, Equity, spelled T-E-A. So for those listening, try some. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. I know you're going to be on Shark Tank this season as a guest.
I am. I'm a guest shark on season 15. The premiere is September 29th. I don't know when this is coming out, but I'll be on several episodes this season. And if you don't catch it on ABC, you can stream it on Hulu.
So what are the things that get you excited about either a company or an idea that you see in a founder?
I think I'm pretty consistent with this because I'm investing at the early stage. And frankly, this is true at any stage. So I don't know why I have to, you know, clarify that. But I think it's even more important at the early stages. I'm looking for a founder who is just obsessed. I'm looking for a founder who changes the energy in the room when they walk in, because they have to believe so wholeheartedly in their vision, in their product, that they're like electric, right? They have to sort of have a gravitational pull where they're drawing people in to buy it. They're drawing in potential employees. They're drawing in, you know, distributors, whatever it is, they need to have this magnetism that just makes things happen, because starting a business is so hard. It is so fraught with challenges. You are going to hear no all day long. And you just have to be the type of founder who steamrolls over the no's and gets to the yeses.
Yeah, I often say, like, you know, my training as an actor, as a journeyman actor in Hollywood, I heard you hear no way more than you. I mean, I eat no for breakfast. Like, it's like a thing. Like, it's like, well, who cares? Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, so somebody else said no. Like, if you ran at the first no, you wouldn't be able to do the thing that you feel so pulled to do. And the work mm-hmm. is hard. So mm-hmm. I love that. That is sort of that clarifying moment. I remember having an acting teacher say to me once, well, if you're tired and you don't like it, like, throw all your headshots away and just, you know, go to Topeka, Kansas. And people would be like, no way, I would never do that. So then if you don't want to do that, then you're here for the work.
What's the alternative? Right.
What's the alternative? Right. You've talked about the difficulty and the challenges around entrepreneurship, how much it asks of you, right? In every sense. And you've talked about, I heard you talk about reframing, just like you reframe the cupcake for us. You reframe this idea of balance in our lives, particularly as women. And the way you said it was, you will think of it as balance over time, not like, oh my God, I have to have balance in every single moment. Can you elaborate and like unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah. I mean, there are certain parts of the entrepreneurial journey that are just going to be all out sprints, and there's no getting around it. I mean, a store launch, a product launch, whatever you're doing, you are birthing something new into the world. And I mean, think about those early days of being a mom. There's nothing balanced about nursing a newborn, right? You're up at all hours of the day. You are stretched as thin as you possibly can. I mean, you're stretched to your breaking point. And that is kind of a great analogy for entrepreneurship, you know, and it gets better. Everybody says you're in the throes of, like, you know, sleeplessness, and they say it gets better and you don't believe them, but it does. And you figure out what you're made of during that time. But then, you know, it'll happen again. It's just like raising children. You think you're in, you know, the home stretch, and then all of a sudden there's like another developmental, you know, phase, and you're like scratching your head again, like, oh, how am I going to handle this and get through this? And once again, you figure out what you're made of and you get through it. So I do know, and with good reason, that, you know, mental health and balance is on so many people's mind, particularly, you know, on the heels of the pandemic. But I want to be clear about this, because I don't want entrepreneurs out there who are feeling stretched, who are feeling tired and haggard, to be like, what's wrong with me? I don't feel balanced, right? The last thing we need is an extra helping of guilt on top of feeling tired and stressed. So I just want people to know it is okay if you've gone through a period of time and you feel really like tired and you feel really stretched. Like, that is normal in the entrepreneurial experience, and you will get through it, and you will get through it. So that's what I'll say. So the balance for me is over time, right? You have these stretches where you have to sprint, and then you have these moments where you're like, oh, I've actually got a handle on things. And that's your balance. Look at it, you know, with a longer term view, rather than just in a day, did I get my yoga in today? Right.
I mean, I can't imagine 16-hour days and sleeping on the floor of, you know, of the bakery. How are you going to, you know, be like, oh, now I'm doing down dog over in the corner. That's not a thing. Like, it's just not a thing. And it's okay to acknowledge that. But you also said that you, looking back, perhaps in those early years, you had wished that maybe you could have nourished some of those support relationships perhaps more, right? Mm-hmm. What does this mean for listeners? Because it's sort of like, I know specifically when we were making from scratch, right? We were adapting, we were in the throes of production. That was not a time where I could like go to a yoga class. I'm in the throes of it, but I could lean into a long phone call with a friend on the way home, right? And that kind of helped to bring down, it like lowered the cortisol levels. It gave me a moment to sort of calm down. Is that, you know, I think nurturing those relationships outside of the work sphere are important. Is that what you mean by that?
So important. I was very fortunate and tended to rely, perhaps overly rely, on the fact that my husband was my co-founder. And so we were each other's support, but sometimes you need to go outside the family. You need to go outside of work, right? Like, there's a lot going on in that relationship. And I really envy entrepreneurs who are coming up these days, because at the time, I was just in such a unique situation. None of my friends were entrepreneurs. I didn't really have anyone who I could talk to who just got it. And I should have done a better job of seeking that person out, finding a mentor during that time. But now I'm a member of so many incredible female organizations for founders specifically, also just women in business and creative thought leaders. So things like WeSuite, Female Founders Collective, if I had had those communities when I was coming up, it would have been a different story. I would have felt so much more supported. So I think my message to, you know, those who are going into the world of entrepreneurship, definitely build your network, find your mentors, join some professional networks, at least one, and utilize it. Give to it, receive from it. And I think all of these things will be so valuable to your journey.
You know, it's so interesting because in your share just now, it reminded me of when I was an early caregiver. I didn't know to reach out for all the people and who to seek, you know, help from. And now looking back, it's something I wish I had cultivated. And now I encourage people who are going to be family care, hey, go get, seek the help you need. It helps to have that balance, to achieve that balance over time, if you have some sort of people helping you along the way, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true in entrepreneurship. I mean, they both require that sort of like nimble response all on care. You know, it's interesting. I think a lot about how caregiving, surprisingly enough, and entrepreneurship bring us to greater growth points as individuals.
Absolutely. And I think that's what really powers me these days, is just continuing to grow and evolve and find out what I'm made of and being the best person I can possibly be, right? Because at a certain point, people say, oh, well, you were successful. What, you know, what next? I'm like, no, we're going to keep on keeping on. Like, what's the next challenge? What's the next no I'm going to hear? I want to get flattened again. I mean, not really, but you're not growing unless you are being told no and feeling crushed from time to time. So I love the feeling I get when I get to the other side of that, when I realize like, oh, I was strong enough to get through that. That period of growth to me is everything.
Yeah, it's that sort of, you've said it, I've said it, other people have said it at times, that idea of you're faced with doing something, there's a no, there's an obstacle, but you want to get there. And then you ask yourself, if I walk away from it, is the feeling of walking away from it worse than the feeling of, you know, just pushing through and seeing what's on the other side? And often when you push through, it's so much bigger than, you know, the kind of comfort you think by going, oh, you know what, I'm not going to take that on. Mm-hmm. You know, you just have to go for it. And the grief of not doing something sometimes is greater than the grief you're going to get doing it.
I agree, because I think there's a little piece inside you that knows what you're able to do, right? That knows like what you're capable of. And when you let that little piece down, it sort of nags at you. And I think that for me, I have two boys. One's a teenager, one's a preteen. And I want to model that for them, because they're going through this period of time where they don't want to rock the boat at all. They want to fit in, right? This is very important to have success and not have, you know, any sort of risk or failure in their life. And I'm like, no. This is when you get to take the risk. This is the time in your life when you don't have to pay the rent and you don't, like, get used to taking risks now and it will serve you well.
Who are the people who have lifted you along the way to your success? I mean, that's part of the reason why I do this podcast, is I love sort of learning all the different facets and the spectrum of the way people perceive and accept and give help to lift others up? Who helped you along the way and who have you helped lately?
So I'm going to pinpoint one. There've been so many people who have helped me along the way. Starting from, you know, I've never met her, but Mrs. Fields, I mean, Martha Stewart, who I have met, but I mean, she's not, I'm not calling her every week. But you know, they kind of were my expanders. They helped me know that being a woman in business and in the domestic arts or food is possible and is a strong thing to do. And, but I will speak about one in particular. So when my husband and I moved to LA, we'd made the decision to open Sprinkles and we were looking for bakeries. Here we were, two out of work investment bankers. We'd never operated, you know, a retail business before. We had no idea what we were doing. And one of our friends had a friend whose mom had a small bakery on Pico here in Los Angeles. And she was so kind, and she would invite us into the bakery in the afternoon when things were kind of slower and feed us chocolate chip cookies and cold milk and answer all of our questions about, you know, how to schedule employees, how to find employees, what equipment to buy, like what should we, you know, paying on rent and insurance and all of these things that were so foundational to starting a business that we had no idea about. And we visited her often. And sometimes not just for the advice, those chocolate chip cookies were really good. But I will always be grateful to her. And then in terms of who I have lifted up recently, I have three meetings on the calendar this week with entrepreneurs who are starting businesses, who are just looking for advice and support and inspiration, whether I'm looking at a pitch deck or whether I'm, you know, trying to offer some help with respect to fundraising. I mentor another baker on the East Coast who just emailed me about potentially getting, you know, a kiosk in one of the retail locations that we operate a Sprinkles in. And so we have sort of a nice email dialogue. So it's kind of constant. And I like to just do it when and where I can.
And it feels generative. I mean, that's the one thing about the giving and the receiving is it's this beautiful ecosystem that is generative for everyone, for the giver and the receiver. That's what I found.
No, it's true. Actually, with the call I had yesterday, the women were so sweet and they thanked me for my time. And they said, you know, and just so you know, we're going to pay it forward. And I was like, that's right. That's exactly what we're doing here.
Love it. We met in person and I was so inspired by you and your share. And you were so open with me and you mentioned From Scratch and I felt so touched that you'd read the book. So you clearly know my personal story. But I want to tell you a fact that you don't know, which is that Sprinkles was founded or came to Beverly Hills the same year my husband died. And thereafter, shortly thereafter, my sister was working in Beverly Hills. And she would bring me Sprinkles cupcakes, like on the regular, because she wanted to bring me some joy.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry. That's really sweet.
Okay, so in my own loss, the cupcake and the joy of the cupcake, it was pivotal. Like so pivotal. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I've never seen a cupcake like this. What, you know, and I didn't know about your company, but I knew what I was receiving and I knew it was meaningful and it was bringing joy and it was done as a true gift. And it felt special. And it were all the things that I needed: joy, deliciousness, beauty. And it makes me think about food and loss and like they sit side by side. So I want to ask you about food and loss. And like, is there a certain go-to meal or a certain flavor or a certain memory you have around a particular food at a time of loss for you?
I think if I could speak maybe more generally to the idea of being comforted by food, I think, you know, for me, it's always been, I mean, no surprise there, but sort of carbs, right? I mean, that is, people do ask like, what's the deal with the cupcakes and the pizza? I'm like, there are some similarities here. We got carbs on the brain. But you know, those sort of true comfort foods for me have always been that. And I think it goes back to those early childhood memories of baking with my mom and feeling homesick and feeling comforted by the treats I baked in the kitchen with her.
Yeah, carbs are absolutely, absolutely essential. I'm not a proponent for bringing salad to grieving people. Me too. I mean,
it's
I received
not gonna have the same effect.
I received a ton of kale salads. And, you know, they were done lovingly and organically and all the things. However, I just wanted like warm carbs all the way.
I'm honored to hear that sprinkles played a part in some of the healing, or at least a, you know, a spark of joy in that very trying time.
Oh, absolutely. And I just wanted to share that back because it's one of those things you never know, like where you're something you've created is touching someone in a really, really meaningful way. And I remember I remember the impact of seeing just the art of it and being like, ooh, what am I looking at?
That?
Yeah, like, what am I looking at? This is great. One last question. This one, I think, is so important. I was watching a show about Halston, and there was a line of dialogue that says, creativity has no budget. And then later, a week later, I heard you say that when you were setting up sprinkles, you would not buy secondhand equipment. You got the best stoves. You got the best equipment. And I was like, I'm hearing a parallel here. So because you're doing a bespoke, I know that word gets overused, but an elevated product, you weren't going to start it with a used stove. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Also, there was a very practical reason for that. We needed the warranty because if our oven broke down, we needed them to come real fast to fix it. We had no idea what we were doing.
Okay, I love that. I just want to include that in because some people will think like, oh my God, I got to like bootstrapping means do everything on a dime. And you do have to be very judicious with your spending. However, that strategy. Your strategy is like, not only does the thing need to work, but also I'm signaling the business that I want.
Right, right. When you're building that brand initially, if you want it to be special, you do have to invest in it. And, you know, Charles and I always say, if we had had investors, Sprinkles probably wouldn't have been what it was because they would have been scratching their heads at our initial investment in that first store. They would have been like, what are you talking about? You need custom oak cabinetry and, you know, beautiful Bertoia stools and all of that. But that's what built our brand. And then at a certain point, once you scale, you're not necessarily doing all custom. You have it sort of set and you can, you know, bring budget into play, but at the outset, and not to say we were also very, scrappy. We had boxes that were just off the shelf boxes that we turned inside out so that they looked custom because we didn't have enough money for a huge run of custom boxes. So we did what we could to be scrappy, but there were certain places that you really have to invest in your business.
Candace Nelson, thank you for being on Lifted. This has been an absolute delight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. You are a delight. I'm so happy that we've connected. And thank you for doing this beautiful podcast that I know is inspiring so many.
Lifted is developed, written, and produced by me and my one-woman producing team, Celia Cates. It is edited by Jamie Moss. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for our next inspiring episode.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.